Benedict kind of thing. So that's where I am personally, and that's why I raise it, that's why I want to have the discussion before I move on this bill. So let nobody kind of go away thinking that this is going to be here forever and that we ought not to take some piece of this and look at the preventative side when we get into it closely or more closely to figure out what we actually need, because I don't think we should have necessarily a Cadillac piece in one part of the justice system.
Madam Chair?
Senator Wensky.
I think you're right, but I'll also say this. You're never going to get an opportunity, I don't think, to extricate these funds from where they're going now unless you do it now. So that's why.
I guess you're right.
If you think you're going to come in and change the flow of this thing in 2 years, I think we're probably not going to be doing that. But I tend to agree with your analysis of it, that it's certainly an area that needs to be examined. But I, the last thing I would like to see is curtailment of any law enforcement activities or the requirement that they seek alternative funds when they've been getting them from basically the same source.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
A couple of quick points. One, there's obviously no objection in this legislature revisiting the question of the distribution of these proceeds after you have some experience in seeing how the bill works, and I think that's entirely appropriate. Bearing in mind, of course, that there is a pour-over provision right now in the measure, that is, law enforcement receives a successively smaller share of the larger and larger forfeiture, so that that kind of funding is already available. Second, this is probably not a cornucopia. I mean, the state police have had extremely good success thanks to some very able officers in the field. One in the Grants Pass area has seized personally more than $1 million in the last calendar year or so. But this is the kind of fund that candidly goes in peaks and valleys. You cannot predict and fund stably on a long-term basis a program counting on the fact that you're always going to have $1 million or $2 million or $3 million because you don't really know. Our RICO fund is broke right now. We have zero in our RICO revolving fund, and that's simply because there's a dry period, and frankly because some of the crooks are getting smart and they don't carry cash around in as big quantities anymore because they know there's a RICO law. So we're happy to see you revisit it, and we would appreciate at least the opportunity to have one biennium's experience that you could then evaluate before you make other moves.
Further comments?
Madam Chair, has Attorney General Frohnmayer commented on the ACLU amendments?
No, I want to settle this one right now and see whether that, and then we'll move on to the next ones and you can bring them forward. So I see two people who are
I didn't hear me. Why, unless there are, I guess I'd still be willing to hear from people out there who may feel strongly about it, but my inclination would be that we go with the program, if we go with the program at all, we go with it at least as far as funding it the way they want it to be funded so that they can do it.
So I don't hear any sentiment except for myself and maybe Springer. And maybe Grinsky if we really truly would deal with it. Maybe we ought to offer them just for a recorded vote on it anyway. Okay, the chair would move the -21 amendments. Goes into a trust fund and with the modifications that are in the back, additions to the proposed amendment.
Maybe it'd be useful, Madam Chair, since apparently I'm not the only one here who isn't exactly clear on the fundamental difference between the A21 amendments and the bill. What is the fundamental difference between those two? So I came in when the thing was underway, and apparently Senator Hill did as well.
Attorney General Frohnmayer explained to us what was in the bill, the formula, how it goes. It's really detailed.
Okay.
You can read it there. The amendments, as it say, put it into a trust fund to be distributed, and doesn't list the specific stack you might make.
The real meat, Senator, is on page 2, section 4. The balance of the property or proceeds goes to is deposited in the special crime and narcotics forfeiture account in the general fund, and then that is used in turn for law enforcement, but also drug treatment and drug education and criminal justice services.
So it's much less specific, and it's going to a trust fund.
Okay, and the bill would provide, and I apologize that I don't.
11B.
Yeah, I can read it, but essentially it provides that the money goes into this program. Is that, would that be correct?
Well,
so what do you
Madam Chair, as a person with obviously strong views on the subject, I think I can draw the single line of difference that Senator Shoemaker is looking for. In my judgment, if the Dash 21 amendments are adopted, it will result in some diminution and potentially a serious diminution in the narcotics enforcement effort of the Oregon State Police statewide, because currently now they depend upon forfeiture proceeds to run their narcotics program. They do not get a dollar of general fund. I think their budget has already gone to bed, and I'm seriously concerned about the disruption in existing narcotics enforcement if these funds are diverted some other place.
Thank you. That's what I needed. I know you already said it, but everything was coming in fast, and I didn't absorb it.
Okay.
How much money are we talking about from this program?
Senator Hill, I know that the representative of the Oregon State Police is here to monitor the bill. I wonder perhaps if I could ask him simply to tell me what the amount of money is that they have seized, so you'd be looking at the aggregate dollars. I think it's the millions.
Between 1 and 2.
Over what period of time?
The answer is between 1 and 2 million over a biennium is what they've got from primarily federal forfeiture. Right. Senator Schwager?
Well, Madam Chair, I came late to this discussion, and I got to leave soon to go down and try to help cite the governor's prison conference committee there. But I guess I support the Dash 21 amendments or a variation that would permit the emergency board to visit this issue. I'm concerned about making this commitment. I think Senator Grinsky is absolutely right. Once we, quote, make a commitment to exclusively using these funds basically for law enforcement or related purposes, we're never going to get it back. And I appreciate the AG's comments, and, you know, if, you know, narcotics enforcement is a priority, then I assume everybody ought to be down in Ways and Means and talking to folks about the spending limit and the 2% kicker, and we'll deal with it in general fund money. If the state police need more money, if that's a priority, we certainly ought to deal with it up front.
Okay. I think we've probably had enough debate and discussion on this issue. Call the roll, please, Pat.
No.
No.
21. No.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Grinsky votes no.
Motion failed. Okay, let's get to the additional amendments. Jack, the Bradley amendments, I guess, are the simple ones, right?
The Bradley amendment, Madam Chair, is Dash 15. It's mixed in with the others. And it is relatively simple. It provides that the bill would contain an affirmative defense that the person against whom forfeiture is being sought could plead that the controlled substance was for personal use. And as I understand it, this is only an affirmative defense when it comes to real property and not personal property.
Okay. Senator Brennan is moving the A-15 amendments to 2282. Are there objections?
I just like to, when you say real, and I just like to have some discussion of them, Madam Chair. I mean,
sure.
Real versus personal, I'm sorry.
The affirmative defense would only be available to persons against whom forfeiture of real real property is being sought. Trying to take real estate, Senator.
Not cash.
Oh, so we're talking about then if someone is found to be in possession of a small amount of a controlled substance.
You can take their money, but not their. You can take their money and their car, but not their property, right?
Come without on, further yeah. inquiry.
Right. Without further inquiry.
Well, that seems fairly extreme to me. I guess I need to have you talk about. I was
this
under
is
the impression.
Modification. Actually, this is a downward modification of what's in the bill.
If we're trying to get at, I guess you have to give me what the fundamental purpose is of what you're trying to do. I mean, I understand if you're trying to get at the proceeds of drug dealers, and it doesn't matter to me whether it's personal or real property, if you're talking about dealers, that's fine. But if you're talking about people who are in possession, as I understand, when you're prosecuting, you're able to determine when somebody is in possession for use and or some level where there's a presumption that they're trying to sell. But if it's just a matter of just for possession, that you're going to take their property. I guess I need you to talk about that some.
Senator Hill, I'm John Bradley, representing the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. Senator Hill, the reason for the amendment is, as we discussed last time, is you could have a situation where somebody was growing one or two marijuana plants and you didn't want to forfeit their entire estate. This would say that if they're growing marijuana plants and it was for personal use, you could not forfeit all their property. In fact, you couldn't forfeit their real property at all. However, if they were growing marijuana or involved in a methamphetamine operation, and where, you know, you're talking about distribution to other people, in those situations, it would allow for the forfeiture of the real property. The ACLU has an amendment, and what their amendment would say, I believe that is the...
Excuse me, Madam Chair, may I interrupt, because I'm confused on a point. We're talking about this as if it applies only to real property.
It does just apply to real property, Senator.
But yet I read Section 7, and it reads as if it applies to personal property such as vehicles, as well as real property. And I need that clarified in my own mind, so
and
I know what we're talking
about. Amendment, Section 8.
Well, it's, am I reading the John Brad, the Bradley Amendment, A-15?
Yes.
All right. And any action brought against property subject to forfeiture under subsection 7 of section 3. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe I
that is real property.
Step. I'm sorry. I was in section 7. That's only real property. All right. I apologize. I was looking at the wrong thing.
So the amendment is to address the real property issue. The ACLU also has an amendment, and their amendment is...
A-13.
Now, the reason why we're opposed to A-13 is because it deals with real property, but it says the real property which is actually used to commit the prohibited conduct. I think what the ACLU is offering the amendment for is if you use 2 square feet of property to do something, you can only forfeit those 2 square feet. Is that?
That is it.
And as a result, it would be a... You know, if we can prove that someone's dealing, and let's say they have an acre of marijuana on a 5-acre farm, you're talking of millions of dollars. We would have to go forfeit the 1 acre and then have to try to go get easements to get to the 1 acre. And
John, I think I understand. Let me just kind of narrow it down
okay.
a little bit. Let's, if you're talking about a certain number of plants,
right?
And I understand now, are you saying that there can be an affirmative defense?
There would be an affirmative defense if you would allow the person to come in and say, I had those marijuana plants, but they were solely for my personal use. And if they can convince the trier of the fact, either a judge or a jury, that's the case, the state cannot forfeit the property.
Now, does this apply to, is this just for marijuana, or does it apply to any
substance? Senator Hill, I think last time I talked, I said I think probably the only two...
I probably missed it, John. That's why.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Probably the only two areas that we deal with in the state as a general rule when we're talking about manufacturing is either marijuana or methamphetamine. And if we're... You generally don't have people using their real property to grow poppies. I mean, although I saw it in the paper this morning, but that's not generally what we're confronted with. So if somebody has a methamphetamine lab, it's not likely that they're going to convince...
So this is just for manufacturing?
Well...
I get somebody shaking their head no, and somebody else shaking their head yes.
It is... It would apply to a delivery.
Okay.
It applies to a delivery, say, in a house. And in a house, you use your house to sell drugs. This would say, under this... It would say that you're going to forfeit your house. But if, on the other hand, if somebody has in their house a bindle of cocaine, the state or the county or the city is not going to be able to forfeit in that instance. Now, maybe the argument is they should be able to in those instances, but this amendment is trying to get to sales. I mean, in other words...
Okay, I understand.
Now, as far as the personal property goes, the money, the television, I'll let Pete answer this. I think there has to be a showing. From what I've read of the federal law, there has to be a showing that there's some connection between the money and the drugs, between the television and the drugs. You can't just walk into somebody's house and because they have a bindle of cocaine, go seize all their furniture. You're going to have to show some relationship there, and I think that's the existing law.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, Pete Shepherd, for the record, from the Department of Justice. That's correct statement of law.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead. David, you want to comment?
Madam Chair, for the record, David Fidanke, ACLU. I guess the only thing on Mr. Bradley's amendment that I'd like to point out is that I think Senator Hill is correct. There is a policy issue here as to whether or not that exception ought to apply to forfeitures of personal property. Obviously, the drafter of the amendment has decided that it shouldn't, and that's a policy decision I think you should consider. As far as the connection between material that is in a place where controlled substances are found, there is a provision in on page 5 of the bill, section 4, sub 8, on page 5 at lines 34 and 35, which relates to probable cause for seizure. If cash, weapons, or negotiable instruments are found in close proximity to controlled substances, then there's an inference that those materials are connected with the controlled substances, and that, according to this provision, that inference is sufficient in itself to provide for the forfeiture unless some affirmative defense is shown by the person who claims an interest in that property. And that's a provision that I'll return to later with one of our other amendments. But I'm not sure that this exactly tracks federal law. Federal law is also very broad, as is this measure before you.
Okay. Are there objections to the Bradley amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, let's, I guess there are some areas where we've had some at least point of discussion, is that correct? And Jack, why don't you go through these amendments and see where we are. Do you have anything else?
No, just the amendments have been proposed by the ACLU, and you're correct, Madam Chair. My understanding is that some of these amendments have been agreed to, and the people at the table can point those out as we go through them.
Okay. We have 12, 13, 14.
The
16, 17. I mean, I have a problem when we're relating these with all the way through here. I'd like to have some suggestions on how you want to proceed.
Madam Chair, David Fidanke, I think
we can lump them.
There are a couple of ways we could proceed. One is to go through the bill in the order that the amendments appear, which is what I attempted to do in my discussion that I distributed today. Or we could deal with the amendments first, where there appears to be some agreement,
and
leave the
that.
Controversial ones.
Yes, I would prefer that.
I think the one that there's probably the most agreement on, and please holler from the back of the room if there's anyone who doesn't feel this way, the A20 amendment, which would provide
seven.
Some clarification. Yes, on page 7, line 32, would provide some clarification on the type of notice which is given at time notice is delivered to a person known to have an interest in the property. Line 32 provides that the person may be served as provided in ORCP 7D. ORCP 7D is designed for providing service in civil lawsuits. Section 6 sets up an administrative procedure whereby property would be forfeited if it is not real property without the filing of a civil lawsuit, as long as a person does not file, as long as no one files a claim within 15 days of the notice of the seizure being served. And we felt that it was very important that that notice explicitly state that the property would be forfeited if a claim is not filed within that 15-day time period. This is very important, and I think it was assumed by everyone involved with this that such a notice would be passed along, but there was no requirement that that be done. And it's very important because I think in most cases, or at least in many cases, property would be seized at the time of an arrest. And it's very likely that the person from whom the property had been seized would be in jail at the time the 15 days ran. And if they have no notice, it's going to be impossible for them to file a claim. It may still be extremely difficult for a person who is incarcerated to file a claim because court-appointed attorneys will not be appointed to handle these types of matters since they're intended to be civil in nature and separate from any criminal proceedings. As a practical matter, it's still going to be very difficult for someone who's had property seized at the time of arrest to exercise their right to ensure that the property is not seized by default. But at a minimum, we felt that they should get notice.
Madam Chair,
okay.
This certainly seems reasonable. I'd like to move the A20 amendment.
Okay. Objections to Senator Grinsky's move the A20 amendment. Are there objections to that amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Next.
I think we have agreement on the A19 amendment relating to the scope of the Oversight Committee. And this is on page 14, lines 22 through 25 of the printed bill. The current language in the bill talks about preparing reports detailing the number and nature of forfeiture judgments issued under the Act. And as we've just pointed out, there will be a significant number of forfeitures carried out through this administrative process. We believe it's important that the committee also keep track of those. And in addition, it was not clear from the language in the Engross bill that the committee would have the authority to look at the issue of the amount of proceeds and what happens to those proceeds, how much of it is funneled off to repay costs of the seizing agencies and the legal costs of pursuing forfeiture cases, and indeed what happens to the clear proceeds. And in dealing with the bounty hunter concern, which we certainly have and continue to have, it's very important that this oversight committee have access to that information.
Madam Chair, move A19 amendment.
Senator Grinsky's moved the A19 amendments. Are there objections to that?
Yes, I bet there are.
Madam Chair, if I could, just a brief comment.
Yes,
Eric,
please.
For the record, Eric Carlson with the League of Oregon Cities.
You want us to kind of be secretive about what you...
No. I just want some clarity in terms of what is expected here. That is, our view of this is that this is a reporting requirement. It's not a budgeting or an auditing requirement as part of the legal budget or the auditing process.
I think that's way out of line. There's nobody's given anybody a budgeting opportunity. We probably will have a budgeting piece next session when we get in here, but I think it's pretty clear that the everybody's lined out what their little chits are in the formula already. So this committee had better make sure to look at the cost of doing business and the cost of collecting it and where it goes and what it's spent on.
We don't have any problem with that. Our problem was with our local auditors who, when they see language like this...
Well, your local auditors are not part of this oversight committee unless you want to make them that. So.
No. The only thing we want to make clear in the record is that you're not expecting us to have the disposition and use of the proceeds something that the auditors have to get into as part of their audit process at the local level. Because these funds go, these are general fund receipts, and there are some issues about how those are reported and how they're tracked.
We'll do the best we can to track that.
We understand that, and we expect to report on these. Our concern is with the legal audit process.
I don't see the word audit here at all.
Well, it may not be. I mean, and maybe this is an excess of caution because we have to live with the audit.
It is far beyond an excess of caution.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
He now has a legislative history.
Are there objections to Senator Gorensky moving the A-19 amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. Okay.
I think the we may not have agreement on the A-17 amendment, but that's probably the least controversial of the ones remaining. The committee at the hearing on this bill expressed some concern that at the post-seizure hearing, standard would be whether probable cause existed at the time of the hearing. We have drafted an amendment that would deal with that issue. This question, there are a couple of ways I think that the committee could deal with this. And in some ways, this issue is wrapped up in the whole question of what happens in a seizure which has been carried out in violation of the Constitution or in violation of the law. The current provisions of the bill allow for a forfeiture proceeding to continue even if the initial seizure was unconstitutional, as long as the forfeiture can be upheld with evidence that's independent of that unconstitutional seizure. And that's a policy issue that we raised in our A-14 amendment. If you decide to allow those forfeitures to continue, if there's independent evidence that's not fruit of the unconstitutional seizure, then the question becomes one that can be dealt with in this A-17 amendment, which is, should the property owner, because really the only issue, the only question at issue in that post-seizure hearing is who gets to use the property while the forfeiture proceeding is pending. Under the current language of the bill, on page 7, lines 13 to 21, if there is not probable cause at the time of the hearing, then the person who is claiming an interest in the property has the property returned to them pending the outcome of the forfeiture proceeding. If probable cause can be shown, then the seizing agency gets to retain the property pending the outcome of the proceeding, gets to utilize that property, gets to possibly sell the property as long as they hold on to the proceeds of that sale. The A-17 amendment would provide that the standard would be probable cause at the time of the seizure. And if there was not probable cause at the time of the seizure, the property would be returned to the person claiming an interest in the property, subject to appropriate conditions imposed by the court. And what we had in mind there was a restraining order prohibiting the disposal of the property and essentially getting out from underneath the forfeiture proceeding. I'm assuming the committee would not want that to happen. But there is an underlying policy issue as to whether or not you want forfeiture proceedings to continue at all when they were the result of unconstitutional seizures up front. We would prefer that they not continue. But if they're going to continue, then at least give the property back to the person pending the outcome of the proceeding. And that's what the A-17 amendment does.
I think this was baited by the police, the people who were talking about developing evidence along the way, I guess. That's my recollection of what this was supposed to be all about. At what point do you have a hearing on forfeiture? I mean, I guess I'm, if you don't have probable cause, then I mean, how do you even get yourself into a hearing if you don't have a probable cause?
Madam Chair, the hearing that's at issue in, and subject to this amendment is a hearing that's provided for the person from whom the property has been seized as a mechanism of getting a judicial determination of whether there was probable cause or is probable cause for the seizure. And it was added to the bill in the House as a mechanism to provide in those cases where the seizure is made without prior judicial approval for access to the courts for a quick and speedy determination of whether the property may be held pending the outcome of the case. Not sure that's responsive to the...
Well, I think so. I guess I'm not sure why this amendment would be all that bad. I mean, you're going to have, by that time, some probable cause, it would seem, and if you have a piece to this amendment, which would still have a...